And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Jerry Barrett. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, you can tell I'm not Tex Mars. He's asked me to set in. I pray that you will give me a little leeway. I'm not as adept at this as Tex is. I'm amazed every week when we record, he sits down, he's got some papers in front of him, no script, and he just goes to town. So I'm filling in for Tex today. He's at home working on his new book that's due out in October 1, I believe. It's going to be called Hell's Mirror. And he's so busy working on it that he just doesn't want to come up for air and come in and record this week. So he's asked me to step in and handle things behind the mic. And I pray that I don't bore you to tears and I do a pretty good job for you. This book he's working on is going to be a humdinger. I've seen some of the cover ideas that him and Sandra have been tossing back and forth, and it's got a number of pictures that's going to be inside it. It's going to be a tremendous book, and we at Power of Prophecy can't wait for it to come out so you can see exactly what he's been working on. But that being said, let's get on with secrets today. I've got a number of items that I want to cover for you today. I want to talk about Sheriff Joe out in Maricopa County out in Arizona. He's just been found guilty of contempt of court. He was contempt because he was doing the job that he was duly elected to do, but liberal judge didn't seem to agree with what Sheriff Joe was doing, so he's found him guilty of criminal contempt. And then we'll go to Australia, where the Weather Bureau's been busted for tampering with data when it comes to climate and the weather and, well, the temperature and things of that nature. And we'll go from there to Nashville, Tennessee, home of the king nut of the climate change, global warming nut jobs out there, Al Gore. Yeah, you'll be surprised to find out what Big Al's been doing. Here's another item. Robert Mueller, the special counsel that's investigating Trump, did you know he delivered uranium to Russians on behalf of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? Oh, yeah. Collusion. Uh-huh. And it looks like Tucker Carlson recently had a guy on that's pushing for Cal Exit, the secession of California from the United States. We'll talk about that one. Speaking of California, we'll also talk about Mad Maxine Waters, the representative out of California, been voted one of the nation's most corrupt lawmakers. Yep. Does it shock you? Doesn't shock me. Mad Maxine. And we also have John McCain claiming that he accidentally voted no when it came time to repeal Obamacare. We'll see what he's got to say about that. Oh, got a number of things. New batch of Hillary emails show abuse of classified information. Yep. A town in New Jersey is banning residents from criticizing mosques. Oh, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she's still in the news with her Pakistani IT department guy. Oh, my. There's also a fella from Alabama. Says he wants to dump the king of the swamp, Mitch McConnell. He wants to take over and clean up the swamp with Donald. We'll also, if we got time, look at the Mexican religious practices that include human sacrifice that's happening on the Texas side of the border. So we've got that and quite a number of things to cover. So let's get to it. First off, this week, I want to start by recognizing the fact that we've lost a number of conspiracy scientists and researchers here in the last year or so. Think about Michael Collins Piper and the tremendous books that he wrote, Judas Goetz, just innumerable books that were outstanding resources. Nurse Joyce Riley passed away recently. Mike and Joyce were at our conferences here in Austin back in 10 when we had the Liberty and Truth Conference. And let's see, we've lost Victor Thorne. He was a tremendous researcher. His books were succinct and to the point and were captivating with the amount of information they offered. Things like 9/11 evil, New World Order assassins, items that we still have some of. So if you'd like to get them, feel free to call us here at the ministry. We lost John DeCamp, the author of The Franklin Cover-Up. We've lost Stanley Monteith, Ted Gunderson. And yesterday, we lost Jim Mars. I got to meet Jim when he was here for our 2013 Liberty and Truth Conference. Tremendous author on the JFK assassination. Tex and Jim had never met face-to-face but knew of each other, and at the conference they were able to sit down and talk and get to know each other better, and they realized that they were cousins. Now, some of you think that they were brothers, but they were cousins, distant cousins, but they were cousins, and it was sad to hear that Jim passed away. Jim was 73 years old, and according to his Facebook page, he died of a heart attack. And Jim will be missed. Our prayers go out to the family. Carol, his lovely wife, got to meet her as well. We are much worse off having lost these researchers, but we're better off having their knowledge that they've passed on to us. So please keep all of them in your thoughts, especially Jim Mars's family, his wife Carol. Keep them in our thoughts and prayers. Got an article here today that talks about Sheriff Joe from Maricopa County out in Arizona. He was found guilty of criminal contempt. The fact that he's on trial is contemptible, to say the least. He was found in contempt of court for detaining persons who did not have any charges from the state, and he was turning them over to ICE for immigration violations. This is supposed to be the job of law enforcement. This law is on the books, and Sheriff Joe was doing his job. The sheriff is granted by the Constitution the highest ranking peace officer position in the country. Sheriffs have more power than the FBI. But you can't tell that to the liberal judges who keep changing what the Constitution says. Monday's decision caps the latest chapter in a decade-long racial profiling case that began after allegations that Arpaio's deputies were targeting Latinos. In the early 2010s, in the late 2000s, Arpaio's office was known as the tip of the spear that would enforce the state's hardline immigration efforts. Its crackdowns included pretextual traffic stops to net those in the country illegally and patrol sweeps that zeroed in on Hispanic neighborhoods. Arpaio's hardline immigration platform was popular with conservatives throughout the country. Arpaio said that he will continue to enforce state and federal immigration law. Now, if you remember, Sheriff Joe also implemented tent cities in his prisons. He figured if the fighting man in Afghanistan and Iraq could be in the desert with nothing more than a tent, that inmates could do the same thing. He also implemented pink jumpsuits for the inmates. That made a lot of the bleeding heart liberals uncomfortable and unhappy. And Sheriff Joe was recently defeated in the election. George Soros spent, I read a report somewhere that George Soros spent around $6 million to help the Democrat that was running against Sheriff Joe for the office of sheriff of Maricopa County. Can you imagine $6 million to be sheriff? And now crime is rampant in Maricopa County, and the voters are having to stand on their laurels now because they allowed this to happen. Got another article here. Australian scientists at the Bureau of Meteorology ordered a review of temperature recording. Seems a government agency was caught tampering with temperature logs in several locations. Global warming. These guys will not stop tampering with data to try to prove that we have global warming or climate change. I love climate change. We have climate change. They're called the four seasons. Says here, the Bureau's quality control system designed to filter out spurious low and high values, which is why the record's automatically adjusted. My. Of course, they reject that there was a tampering going on, but the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia has taken steps to ensure that the hardware at this location is replaced immediately. And quality assurance is being implemented as we speak. Speaking of climate change, the biggest whack job out there promoting this climate change is Al Gore. Al Gore's back in the news. It seems Al Gore's home uses 34 times more electricity than the average U.S. household. Wouldn't you think if somebody who is this gung-ho about climate change would live in a smaller house with a smaller carbon footprint, as they call it, instead of living in this great big mansion, flying to and fro on personal jets, private jets, to meet to talk about global warming or climate change? All Al Gore's done is get rich off of this scheme, and Donald Trump saw through it and got us out of the Paris Climate Accord, and rightly so. It seems that nearly all of Al's predictions have failed to materialize. But it hasn't stopped this climate nut from peddling a sequel to his famous documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. It's going to be called An Inconvenient Sequel. And it debuted in theaters last Friday. Good night, nurse. Seems in the past year, Gore burned through enough energy to power the typical American household for 21 years. This according to a new report by the National Center of Public Policy Research. Seems Al Gore consumed 230,889 kilowatt hours at his Nashville residence, which includes his home, a pool, a driveway entry gate. A typical family uses an average of 10,812 kilowatt hours of electricity per year. Last September alone, Gore devoured 30,993 kilowatt hours of electricity. That's enough to power 34 average American homes for a month. It's okay for Al Gore to gobble up electricity, but you better not. Do as I say, not as I do. Here's an interesting article. We all know that Robert Mueller has been appointed special counsel to talk about the collusion between Russia and President Trump. It seems that Julian Assange of WikiLeaks late last week released some information on a 2009 State Department cable to the Russians, and it raises questions about the objectivity of one Robert Mueller. It seems that then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton directed FBI Director Mueller to deliver a sample of highly enriched uranium to Russia. The uranium had reportedly been stolen. It seems particularly odd considering that the FBI is not under the supervision of the State Department and that the FBI Director would personally make the transfer. Unbelievable. Robert Mueller is investigating Donald Trump for collusion with Russia, and here it is in 2009, he's colluding with Hillary Clinton to give Russia a sample of our uranium. Now, we've all heard Tex report this before. Russia donated $140 million to Hillary's Clinton Foundation in exchange for the uranium that was given to them. If there's collusion, it should be between, obviously, Robert Mueller, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama. As revealed by WikiLeaks, Secretary of State Clinton sent a cable to John Beryl, who was the U.S. ambassador to Russia, the U.S. ambassador to the Georgia embassy, and the U.S. ambassador to the Russian embassy on August 17, 2009. The cable read in part, "Action request. Embassy Moscow is requested to alert at the highest appropriate level the Russian Federation that FBI Director Mueller plans to deliver the HEU, or the highly enriched uranium, sample once he arrives in Moscow on September 21. It was a 10-gram sample of the HEU to Russian law enforcement sources, and it occurred during a secret plane-side meeting on the tarmac. Seems the Clintons have something going on with these meetings on the tarmac. They're just crooked as all get out. Recently on Fox News, Tucker Carlson debated a Cal Exit supporter who calls California not the U.S. Well, it seems that the United States may lose a star on its flag for the first time ever if Cal Exit becomes reality. Carlson said the Cal Exit movement wants California to become an independent country through a ballot initiative in 2018, but it will require 585,000 signatures to get started. Shankar Singham, a supporter of Cal Exit and vice president of the California Freedom Coalition, told Carlson the split does not have to be hostile. Carlson asked, "Do you fully comprehend the implications of this? Why would the rest of us Americans let California go without a war?" Shankar said, "California needs the middle class to leave in order to make room for the new wave of immigrants to come up from south of the border. It's actually a good thing," he says. Can you believe that? California is wanting to trade illegal immigrants for the working middle class. You know, you can read between the lines. He's talking about the white middle class in California. "We're exporting our middle class to the United States. You guys should be thanking us for that. Come on." Singham also expects that those who flee California will take the values of that state and turn them into Democrat strongholds in other states. He says, "Not only that, you know, when our middle class does move out to Texas or to Colorado, they're taking our values out to the United States and to Texas. And soon enough, Texas will become a blue state." But in the end, Singham expects those who leave to move back to California once they realize how boring it is outside the state of California. He says, "If they want to move, there's nothing for me to stop them. I'm sure they'll find out how boring it is and they'll come running back." Shankar claims that the Golden State of California is a dominant economic powerhouse and has the fifth largest economy in the world. Yeah, he says that. Critics of the state often dismiss it as a haven for snowflakes and hippies and insinuate that it wouldn't be missed from the Union. He says, "This is California. We're not the United States. We disregard what the United States thinks or even their laws." Tucker Carlson asked what should happen with the thousands of troops on bases like Camp Pendleton, because it would then be considered foreign soil. Shankar said the nation of California should charge a fee to keep U.S. troops there, comparing the relationship to the one we have in Landstuhl, Germany. A previous attempt at California nationhood was dumped in April after failing to find enough support, but they believe that things will be different with the new ballot initiative. First, they have to repeal a provision in the California Constitution that states that California is an inseparable part of the United States. They want to change it to establish that California is a fully independent country. But if they secede, It'll come at a cost, including at least $1.25 million in state funding for an independent commission to research this ballot initiative. But it's also going to have unknown, potentially major fiscal effects if California voters approve changes to the state's relationship with the United States. These guys seem to think that this financial risk is worth it, especially considering their political leanings are at odds with the current administration. Steve Gonzalez of the California Freedom Coalition told the Sacramento Bee that we feel that California has been neglected and left out of the political process for many, many decades. Steve, are you serious? The Democrats flock to Hollywood to schmooze with the liberal elites that infiltrate Hollywood and Burbank, taking all the money that they can from those people. It says here, after Trump's election, a January poll from Reuters showed 32% of Californians would back a California exit from the United States. Now, I got this from Wikipedia after I read this article. California is home to almost 25% of the nation's undocumented population. Wikipedia, being politically correct, that's illegal immigrants to those who speak American. 25% of the country's illegal alien population is in California, and they make up 6% of California's residents overall. It says here that two-thirds of California's illegal alien population has lived in that state for more than 10 years. And according to recent Census Bureau projections, currently there are 100,000 more Hispanics in California than whites. Go ahead. Have at it, California. Have at it. Speaking of California, oh, Mad Maxine Waters. She is something else. This is the woman that you people in California keep sending to Washington, D.C. as your voice. This is the same woman who claimed that Russia invaded Korea, when in fact they invaded the Crimea. And y'all keep sending her. This article says Representative Maxine Waters named one of the most corrupt lawmakers in the nation. Oh, Mad Maxine says over the last year, and due to the focus of House Republicans on so-called Muslim radicalization, we have seen politicians and pundits attacking the Islamic faith as a security threat to the United States. Across the country, these people are exploiting fear and trying to convince state legislatures that the state adoption of Sharia tenets is the strategy extremists are using to transform the United States into an Islamic country. Maxine, that's a fact. The Quran says that you will either convert or you're an infidel. And if you're an infidel, you should die. One of the things that Mad Maxine Waters did as in her position as a senior member of Congress and a member of the House Financial Services Committee was to prevail upon Treasury officials to meet with One United Bank to help them in the midst of the national financial catastrophe. However, Mad Maxine never disclosed that her husband held stock in the bank. This outrageous conduct has led Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, CREW, to include the Congresswoman as one of the most corrupt members of Congress. Executive Director Melanie Sloan from the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington said, by contacting then Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson to request a meeting, allegedly for a group of minority-owned banks, but then arranging for only one bank, One United, in which she had a financial interest to attend, Representative Waters violated House conflict of interest rules. Around the same time, Representative Waters asked the Treasury Department to hold the initial meeting. Representative Waters spoke to Representative Barney Frank, about one united Barney Frank, the Democrat from Massachusetts, telling him that her husband previously had served on the board. Representative Frank advised her to stay out of matters related to the bank. Nevertheless, Representative Waters' chief of staff and grandson, Michael Moore, continued to actively assist One United representatives in their quest to receive bailout funds and work to craft legislation authorizing Treasury to grant One United's request. So not only is she mad, crazy, but she's a crook. Well, it seems that in November of 2010, Waters was scheduled for an ethics trial, but the House Ethics Committee postponed the hearing. In July of 2011, the committee hired respected D.C. attorney Billy Martin as outside counsel to investigate both the case against Representative Waters and the committee itself. Ms. Sloan from Crewe said that the Ethics Committee has handled the case against Representative Waters with the maturity of school children. Good night, nurse. It says this is the seventh edition of the Crewe's Most Corrupt Report, an annual look at a bipartisan collection of Washington's worst. This year's list includes 7 Democrats and 12 Republicans. 5 are repeat offenders. Why do we keep putting these people in office in Washington, D.C.? I don't understand it. We need to get out and vote. We need to get out and demand better from our representatives, our senators. The Constitution says they work for us. We don't work for them. That role's been reversed, and we need to rectify that issue. Write your congressman. Write your senator. Be vocal. Stand up for you and your neighbor and your friends and your family and do the right thing. Here's a quick one. John McCain recently was diagnosed with cancer. Everybody feels bad for him. The guy that squealed like a stuck pig and the Hanoi Hilton in Vietnam when he was a POW and committed treason against the United States, who was pardoned by Nixon, or else he would still be in prison, has been duly elected by the people of Arizona, who fired Sheriff Joe Arpaio to put a Democrat in because they didn't agree with everything that Arpaio was doing, and they let Soros's lackey win the election. Arizona, you're just as guilty as California in a lot of ways. It says John McCain says he accidentally voted no on the health care repeal. John McCain had been saying constantly, let's bring it to a vote. Let's repeal Obamacare. Let's repeal Obamacare. But when it comes time to stand up and be counted, he votes like the liberal lapdog that he is. From the website president45th.com, the article says McCain stunned the whole nation by voting no on the Obamacare annulment on the Senate floor a few days ago. Yet despite the fact that he made a flood of new fans on the left, he is currently saying he committed an error and that his cerebrum tumor is to mind. I quickly lost my faculties, McCain said, and truly couldn't recollect which route was up and which was down. McCain goes on, that is to say, obviously, to vote to cancel it, similar to the arrangement, as I've specified sometime recently. Nothing Republicans like accomplishing more than screwing the whole nation. This mind tumor is truly incurring significant damage. You people in Arizona need to get better representation in D.C. Stand up and be heard. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue on with secrets. These are my favorite time of the month. I always tell Tex it's the fastest hour in radio because it seems like before we know it, he's gone through the hour and we're done. We're halfway there, folks. Hang in there with me. I'll be right back after this brief message.
Holy Serpent of the Jews. It's one of my newest books. Hi, folks. I'm Tex Morris. I hope you'll order this book. You know, I'm looking at the back cover of it, and it's very descriptive. The headline says, "The Most Colossal Devil Religion Ever." That's what Judaism is. Now, a lot of folks don't understand that. They think that Judaism is a godly religion, a religion of love and peace and harmony. And they believe that because they read the Old Testament. And they read about the great men of the Bible, you know, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Moses, and so forth. And they say, well, isn't Judaism a great religion? But you see, these men did not practice the Judaic religion. That's the dirty secret. The dirty secret is that Judaism is not practiced by them. In fact, Jesus said Judaism is a separate religion, totally separate than the prophets gave us. If the Jews had stayed with that religion and kept up their old covenant, everything would be fantastic. I would be sitting here applauding the greatness of the Jews and their religion. But let me explain to you. Jeremiah, Isaiah, all the great prophets are on one side of this big divide. And on the other side, the wicked side, is their religion, not their religion, but the religion of Judaism. Now, that's what I talk about. I tell you what Judaism really is. And I tell you who they worship. You may not understand this, but the Jews do not worship God. They don't worship the great I Am. They don't worship the same God that Abraham and Moses and all the great men of the Bible worshiped. They worship the serpent, Satan. Let me say that again. The Jews today, in their religion of Judaism, worship the serpent. I prove it in this book. Now, I haven't had one rabbi write me. I haven't. I'm waiting for the first letter from a rabbi. I want to hear from you, rabbi. Write to me and tell me that everything in this book is false. Tell me that your religion, that most Jews don't worship Satan. And you keep it a secret from us. You have to. And you have a secret plan, don't you? It's a plan to crush the Gentiles and vault the Jews to global dominion. That's what this book is all about. I quote the rabbis. The most famous rabbis in the world are quoted in here. I've done my homework, my friends. Oh, yes, I've done my homework. That's why the Jews hate me. They hate me. They hated Jesus, too. They killed Jesus, our Lord. Why? Because he said, you have for religion the traditions of men. That's part of that vain deceit. That's part of that philosophy of the world that ruins people, that spoils them. I talk about it in this book. I have put together a book. This is the first and only book in the entire world that unmask the Jewish religion. The Jews will not debate me on television. They did do one thing. I believe it was the World Zionist Congress. The World Zionist Congress, the most powerful organization in the entire world, sent a letter to Amazon. They said, you've got to take this book off your list. You cannot offer the book Holy Serpent of the Jews by Tex Mars because he is a notorious anti-Semite. Why am I a notorious anti-Semite? For quoting the rabbis? You would think they would give me a medal for that. Yes, give me a medal for quoting the rabbis. Not only the modern rabbis, but the most ancient and famous. I quote your Talmud, the most holy book of the Jews. I quote your Kabbalah, another great holy book of the Jews. I tell people what the Kabbalah and the Talmud preach, what they say, and what your rabbis teach the people. But as for you, you want to keep it a secret. And anybody that exposes these things, anybody that tells the truth about your religion, you call a notorious anti-Semite. I call myself a great champion. I am a champion of the Jews. Why? Because I don't want any Jew to go to hell. I want them to believe in Jesus Christ and go to heaven. That's where I'm different than other Christian pastors. I want the Jews to be in heaven with me. A lot of people just say, well, I hate the Jews. I don't hate the Jews. That's insane. I want the Jews to know the truth. Now, before you can give the Jews the truth, why don't you find it out for yourself? Why don't you get this book? I challenge you, Finn. Maybe you think that I'm just lying. Maybe you think that, you know, I'm a 70-year or 72-year old man. I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe I'm getting a little dents in the head. Maybe I don't know what I'm doing. Well, check me out. Get this book. It's 200 and some odd pages, and read it for yourself. Read what the rabbis actually say about their religion. Now I challenge you, read the Holy Bible. I love for you to read the New Testament. You'll see what our great, great, great preachers, like Paul and John and Peter, what they all taught us. What Jesus said. I challenge you, read what Jesus said in the Bible. You'll know what Christianity is. Read the New Testament. And you'll go away so amazed, so inspired, so encouraged. But then you read this book here. And then what happens is you say, Tex Mars told the truth. No wonder the World Zionist Congress wants to shut him up. No wonder the Christian bookstores are too scared to have this book. Now, I've exposed the Muslims, too. I had an entire program exposing the Muslims. I'm no friend of Islam. Oh, no, uh-uh. Somebody said to me, Tex, what do you think of the Jews and the Muslims? What can you say about each one of those religions? I'll tell you what I say. It's like two scorpions in a bottle. Have you ever taken a scorpion and put him down a Coke bottle? Just tick, you know, one of these real nice Coke bottles. And then you take another scorpion and just tick, put him in the bottleneck too. And there you have two scorpions. They're going to fight. They're going to make war. They're going to maybe kill each other. Because it's in their nature to do so. That's what I think about Islam and Judaism. What do I think about Christianity? I only think of love. In fact, the Bible says God is love. I can't find that anywhere in the Talmud. I can't find that anywhere in the Kabbalah, that God is love. But that's what the Apostle John said. And he said, that's how we know you're a Christian, if you love your brother. Now, sometimes I don't meet up to that criteria. I have to ask Jesus to help me. To help me have the love that one should have in their heart for a brother or sister. But I want you to know about these Jews. I want, not every Jew. No, not every Jew. But the vast majority in Israel today worship the serpent. That's bad. It's bad. This book is $20. Add $5 shipping and handling. A total of $25. We'll send this book right to you. And I think you'll be very pleased with it. And you'll say, wow, I know something about Judaism now. I know what it's all about. I'll never be fooled again. I'll never be deceived by the rabbis, I'll understand why Jesus said, you have for your religion the traditions of men. He also said something else. He said they worship the serpent. That's right. That's what Jesus said. They worship the serpent. And they do. Now this book, available for $25, that includes shipping and handling, is available on our website, powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com, or you can phone us toll free, 1-800-234-9673, or write to us, write to Tex Mars, or Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733.
And now let's continue with secrets. Seems that a new batch of Hillary emails shows abuse of classified information and donor favors. Pay for play. Judicial Watch requested a Freedom of Information Act, and a new batch of Hillary Clinton emails were released and provides further evidence that her top aide, Huma Abedin, sent classified information through a non-secure account. Why haven't they indicted Hillary Clinton, Huma Abedin, the whole lot? And I'm sure Obama's no different than all these other criminals. The emails, among 1,606 pages of documents from the U.S. State Department, confirm that donors to the Clinton Foundation regularly obtain special favors from Clinton staff. The documents included 91 Clinton email exchanges not previously turned over to the State Department. Why not? That's obstruction of justice. At least 530 emails now are known to not have been part of the 55,000 pages of emails that Clinton turned over to the State Department. That fact contradicts Clinton's statement that as far as she knew, all of her government emails had been turned over. Pay-to-play, classified information mishandling, influence peddling, cover-ups. These new emails show why the criminal investigation into Hillary Clinton's conduct must be resumed, said Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. The Trump Justice Department and the FBI need to reassure the American people they have finally stopped providing political protection for Hillary Clinton, he said. Judicial Watch has said that although the State Department is now under President Trump, its attempts to obtain emails from Hillary Clinton through the Freedom of Information Act are still being obstructed. In March, the Washington Examiner noted Trump's State Department refused to change legal tactics that would have allowed the department to look for additional Clinton emails. Nevertheless, less than a week ago, Trump criticized Attorney General Jeff Sessions in a tweet for taking a very weak position on Hillary Clinton crimes. Judicial Watch said the latest emails were released under a court order in a lawsuit filed in 2015. Judicial Watch says the Freedom of Information Act suit against the State Department sought all emails of official State Department business received or sent by former Deputy Chief of Staff Huma Abedin from January 1, 2009 through February 1, 2013, using a non-state.gov email address. On March 12, 2009, Sid Blumenthal, former aide to Bill Clinton and confidant of Hillary Clinton, sent Mrs. Clinton a memo about Northern Ireland that was classified confidential, and the details were withheld from release under the FOIA exemption. Further, on February 27, 2009, Ambassador Milan Vavir sent Clinton a briefing memo email on discussions she held with the Congolese officials, which was classified as confidential. Good night, nurse. Here's another. On August 20th, 2010, State Department official Laura Lucas sent to Abedin's unclassified email account a call sheet for Clinton with Spanish Foreign Minister Miguel Moratinos, which contained classified confidential information. Special favors for Clinton Foundation donors turned up repeatedly in the emails. For example, Howard Buffett Jr., grandson of Warren Buffett, sought a meeting for his father, Howard Sr., with Hillary Clinton to discuss food security. The Buffett family, including Warren, his son Peter, and his late wife Susan through the Susan Buffett Foundation all donated heavily to the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation. On behalf of Howard Buffett Jr., Bill Clinton aide Ben Schwerin asked Obadon to get Howard Buffett Sr. a meeting with Clinton. Obadon replies, "We will take care of this." Here's another example. April 12, 2009, Miguel Lausel, a Puerto Rican telecom executive who reportedly donated $1 million to the Clinton Presidential Library and was a member of the Clinton Global Initiative, made a request of Obadon through Clinton Foundation executive Doug Band to push for the appointment of someone to become U.S. ambassador to the Dominican Republic. Lausel concludes, "I will be in D.C. from the 7th to the 9th and would like, if possible, to say hello to Hillary." Seems the next day, Clinton aide Nora Toive passed Lausel's message to Clinton special assistant Lauren Gelati to make sure there was a response. Clinton's carelessness with security is also evident. In one case, on April 23, 2010, Obadon tried to set up a secure call for Clinton with Dennis, whose last name is not known, but it didn't connect. Clinton's response, "We've now tried twice to go secure and lost both calls. We finally gave up and talked in code non-secure." Two of the emails show Clinton or her staff expressing an interest in tyrants. April 18, 2009. Obadon told senior advisor Philippe Reynes that Clinton had an encounter with Venezuelan dictator Hugo Chavez, who complimented Bill Clinton, said he hoped that she would come to Venezuela. She said she hoped so, too. In another incident, veteran diplomat Wendy Sherman advised State Department officials on February 6, 2009, to inform North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il that Hillary Clinton looks forward to the day when enough progress is made that she can come to North Korea as well. Good night, nurse. Hillary, criminal. Obadon, criminal. Why haven't they been prosecuted? Why haven't they been charged? It's ridiculous. All right, here's a new one. A New Jersey township that was sued by Muslims for refusing to approve a massive mosque project is now returning to court because of a settlement agreement that restricts speech regarding Islam. The settlement required the township to hold a public meeting about the mosque project, but it forbade anyone from commenting on Islam or Muslim. A key tenet of Sharia, the Muslim law that governs both personal and political life, bans any negative comments about Islam or Muslims. According to the Thomas More Law Center, which sued the township on behalf of two residents whose home is within 200 feet of the proposed mega mosque, the settlement with Bernard's Township reads more like an instrument of surrender. The Islamic Society of Basking Ridge sued and won a decision in federal court after its mosque proposal was rejected based on traffic and other concerns. The township agreed on a $3.5 million payment and a public hearing to approve the settlement. Residents Christopher and Loretta Quick challenged the agreement in court, arguing it restricts speech and violates the Establishment Clause by preferring Islam over other religions. Richard Thompson, chief counsel for Thomas More, said the Islamic Center has taken the extraordinary step of concealing significant links on their website to a radical group named by the federal government as an unindicted co-conspirator in the largest terrorism financing trial in American history, the Islamic Society of North America, or ISNA. ISNA is claimed by the Muslim Brotherhood as one of our organizations. Isn't that special? Debbie Wasserman Schultz, here's another one. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a Democrat who was in charge of the Democratic National Committee, is up to her neck in security breaches. Oh, my, my, my. Seems a former chairwoman of the DNC had her office equipment seized by Capitol Police as part of a criminal investigation into congressional network security violations. Wasserman Schultz admitted she frequently violates the DNC's information security policy, but still managed to point her finger at someone else. She blamed the House of Representatives' chief office manager for not stopping her from violating policies and perhaps the law regarding classified material. According to media accounts, During an appropriations hearing on Congress's administrative budget in May, Wasserman Schultz conceded she had violated the policies for many years. She also sought to find out how much might be known about her internet usage, and she asked if members of Congress are monitored. This is the same woman who pushed for a special prosecutor to investigate an alleged Russian hacking of the DNC's IT system. Could they have been more careless, asked police investigator Nolan Fitzsimmons. Police are investigating Wasserman Schultz's longtime IT, or information technology aide, Imran Awan, for theft and funneling congressional data from members of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Committee on Homeland Security, and Committee on Foreign Affairs. A former police department intelligence official believes part of the reason the Democratic Party and their allies in the news media continue their overall narrative that Donald Trump and Russia's Vladimir Putin colluded to destroy innocent Hillary Clinton's presidential aspirations is to divert attention away from the shenanigans of three Pakistanis hired by Democratic politicians. The Democrats in Congress hired three brothers to work key jobs in the House of Representatives, and it's believed they spied for radical Islamic groups with the blessings of American politicians like Debbie Wasserman Schultz. The three brothers are all Pakistani immigrants. They were hired by Democratic lawmakers to manage the information technology for the party's members of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and other components of the House of Representatives. Congresswoman Gwen Graham, who served on the Armed Services Committee and on the Tactical Air and Land Forces Subcommittee, had employed Jamal Awan. Jamal was also employed by Representative Cedric Richmond, who is part of the Committee on Homeland Security and on its Terrorism and Cybersecurity Subcommittee. Oh, my. These people just opened the hen house to the wolves, and they're still in office. Hey, here's one. Republican candidate wants to dump the king of the swamp, Mitch McConnell. Representative Mo Brooks from Alabama says, if you elect me to the Senate, you will have my word. I will not vote for Mitch McConnell as majority leader. Congressman Brooks is currently serving Alabama's 5th Congressional District. He was elected to the House of Representatives in 2010. He's been leading the charge for a sustainable, balanced federal budget, ending illegal immigration, maintaining a strong national defense, and an economic environment that benefits working American families. Currently, Mo serves on the Armed Services, Foreign Affairs, and Science, Space, and Technology Committees. He's a founding member of the Freedom Caucus, a group of fiscal and social conservative members who are fighting to regain the party's conservative agenda. He says it's time for a Republican leader in the Senate who will work on behalf of the people to enact President Trump's agenda and not the agenda of the D.C. establishment. During McConnell's reign as head of the swamp, the Senate has stalled on key legislation and failed to enact President Donald Trump's agenda. Just look at what's happening in the Senate this week with health care. For 7 years, Republicans have called for repeal and replacement. But now it's clear they're not telling the truth. McConnell promised to repeal Obamacare, yet he has not done it. Mo asked, what's going on with the Senate? We know President Trump is ready to sign conservative bills, but McConnell can't or won't get it done. He says when your football coach goes 0-12, you fire him. You get a new coach. McConnell can't get it done? It's time for a change. McConnell, yeah, he's part of the problem too. Hey, Mexican religious practices include human sacrifice on the Texas side of the border. It's a unique Mexican-based religion that includes ritualistic human sacrifice and is being observed more frequently among drug traffickers and violent criminal cartels. Texas law enforcement officials, including the statewide Texas Rangers, are warning Mexicans and Americans about these blood rituals that honor La Santa Muerta, the Saint of Death. Leaders on both sides of the border are warning their people about the pagan-like religion devoted to La Santa Muerta. Mexican law enforcement has states that the religious practice of holy death has gained widespread popularity since the late 1980s. The focus of worship is a female image dressed in what appears to be a Catholic nun's habit. Narcotics cartels actually pray for the spiritual protection of heroin, cocaine, or weapon shipments, especially those headed for the United States. Seems a rough neighborhood at Tepito, Mexico City. In 2004, authorities arrested a local car thief who later died in prison. A powerful criminal figure, he killed virgins and babies once a year and offered them as sacrifices to Santa Muerta to gain her favor and magical protection. In 2008, in Nuevo Laredo, Gulf Cartel enforcers captured Sinaloa cartel members, took them to public Santa Muerta shrines, and executed them. Analysis by a U.S. law enforcement officer suggests that the perpetrators killed them as offerings to Santa Muerta. Oh, and the list goes on and on and on. In Cancun, June 2010, investigators found the bodies of 6 tortured victims, 3 with their hearts cut out and with the letter Z carved into their abdomens, in a cave outside of the resort city. Presumably, the killers belonged to the Los Zetas cartel, and the victims belonged to a competing group. Hey, here's something. We all know that Donald Trump wants to build a border wall between the United States and Mexico. Who do you think should construct it? Well, it seems that there is a new contract that's been reached with Elbit Systems to implement advanced security systems on the U.S. border with Mexico. Elbit Systems is an Israeli defense electronics company. Interesting. During the 2016 election campaign, Donald Trump lauded Israel's border security expertise when commenting on his proposed wall with the U.S.-Mexican border. He said, "You could ask Israel about walls that work. Believe me, walls work." Oh, yeah. They do know how to build walls. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu tweeted in January of 2016, "President Trump is right. I built a wall along Israel's southern border. It stopped all illegal immigration. Great success. Great idea." Mexico's foreign ministry was not happy. Under the purported new contract, Elbit's U.S. branch would implement its integrated fixed tower border security system along several hundred miles of Arizona's border with Mexico. The system will gradually expand to other areas of the U.S.-Mexico border. Advanced surveillance equipment, including advanced radars and cameras fitted to sensor towers situated along the border, will be part of the system. It'll provide Border Patrol agents with 24/7 surveillance capabilities and a cohesive view of the security scenario. According to a July 24 statement released by Elbit Systems of America, the first stages of the IFT system have already been constructed along the U.S.-Mexico border. The system was reportedly approved by U.S. Customs and Border Protection in July and implemented in Douglas, Arizona, marking Elbit's second successful deployment of the system, with the first occurring in the Nogales, Arizona area. Oh, yeah. Here we go. If you want security, get the Israelis. I wonder if they'll follow Al Gore's lead and put solar panels on it. Why not? Generate a little electricity while we're keeping the illegals out. Also, you know, China has the Great Wall of China. We could call this the Greater Wall and put Chinese restaurants across the top. Here we go. Well, folks, I hope I haven't bored you to tears, and I hope you've had fun today with me. I've enjoyed filling in for Tex. Tex will be back in this seat next week, and I'm sure we'll have an interesting program for you. Thank you for tuning in and putting up with me. My prayer is that you'll tune in each week and discover the power of prophecy.